petitioner respondent versus James Jason McMillan appellant.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Suzanne Remington, and I represent the appellant in this matter, James McMillan. Your Honor, there are many issues before the court today, and I will list them in sort of the order. They sort of build on each other. So there's an order.
It seems like they're all intertwined with how we come out on determining the gross monthly income. I mean, that has kind of sets the stage for everything, right?
They're all intertwined. And it was interesting when I got to my conclusion, it all just came together when I wrote my brief, because it really does go in an order that you have to think about this case. First of all, Your Honors, the district court incorrectly calculated, do you mind if I use husband and wife instead of, okay. The district court incorrectly calculated husband's gross income for the purposes of calculating child support when it failed as a matter of law to appropriately apply Minnesota Statute 518A.29 and 518A.23. Secondarily, then, the district court incorrectly calculated wife's gross income for purposes of child support when it either used the company's 2019 financial records only or used a five-year average instead of using the company's 2020 financials or a two-year average if needed based on Minnesota Statute 518A.23. Then, Your Honor, the third issue becomes based on those two inaccuracies, then we have an error committed in the child support calculation. I mean, that would be a given. If the gross incomes are incorrect for either or both of the parties, we have an incorrect calculation of child support. Fourth, Your Honors, is the issue of spousal maintenance. The district court committed error when it calculated the gross monthly incomes of the parties, and then it failed to award husband spousal maintenance, and it failed to even analyze the husband's request for spousal maintenance under Minnesota Statute 518.003. You cannot find an analysis in the decision that the district court issued.
I was going to ask you about child support, but as long as we're on the husband maintenance, you know, what concerns me, Ms. Remington, is that it was your client, husband, who announces at trial, yep, when it's set for trial, that he wants nothing to do with the business. And, you know, when you look through the spousal maintenance factors, why would we even consider whether there would be a spousal maintenance claim or that he would even be in a position to assert that when essentially, if it wasn't for the type of businesses, it's sort of like, well, I'm quitting my job.
Well, Your Honor, this case is so incredibly unique. It's actually a case where both of the parties participated in running the business, and they both were gainfully employed by this business. At the beginning, we contemplated the parties continuing to own the businesses. That would have been the easy way to resolve this case, but it became abundantly clear that these parties could not continue to operate a business together and could not continue to be married. So what wound up happening, Your Honor, there was always this, there were plenty of negotiations that went back and forth, and obviously we never came to an agreement. During the case, there was always an assumption somebody was going to get spousal maintenance. We just didn't know who it was. Because if husband got the businesses, this is before we'd started trial, right? If husband got the businesses, I knew wife would need spousal maintenance. She's got to figure out a different career, right? And why doesn't that same principle apply to the husband? If wife got the businesses, certainly there would be a claim for spousal maintenance because he would be completely unemployed. And as you can imagine, spousal maintenance was always an issue in this case.
But if you know going into it, you're going to be unemployed. Well, I don't care whether it's husband or wife.
Mm-hmm.
You're essentially quitting your job, or you're being forced out of your job. You're losing your employment. So why is the court wrong in taking a look at his earning ability, his employment history, I should say, his employment history, because there's nothing to say that he can't work in a capacity that's going to generate the same or like-kind income?
Oh, Your Honor,
I know we haven't talked about non-compete.
No, that's okay. Well, I'll dig right in, right? What do we know about spousal maintenance and awarding spousal maintenance? Well, one of the keystone cases is Melius. And in that case, it specifically says that a district court cannot use earning capacity for an obligee unless they make a finding of bad faith or unjustified self-limitation, right? He was fired basically from his job, right?
Well, I want you to answer this. He wasn't, I used the word terminate or was fired from his job, but that's not true because he elected that. He made that choice. So it's not being fired. He's electing not to seek that as a possible source of income for him. So I kind of look at that as a voluntary quit, and that's why I'm thinking, why would he be eligible?
So, Your Honor,
why would she be eligible if she had turned in and done the same thing?
Well, Your Honor, what would have happened if we would have just gone to trial and the court had to decide who got the businesses? The court would be firing someone, right? Because each party had a legitimate claim to the business.
It didn't happen here. So those facts are not considered because it was entirely different. It was I'd look at it the same way if it was the wife that had done it. I mean, they're making a decision rather abruptly, in fact, that they want nothing to do with the business.
But I don't understand why we're punishing him for making a decision to agree to a strategy for trial, which was, I accept respondents, experts, numbers. I'm tired of arguing about it. I'm going to accept them. I'm also tired of arguing about spousal maintenance. So, if it was always, I mean, it just seems hypocritical to me that
I could see, I'm sorry to interrupt, but when we get to, I mean, when I'm looking at the district court's findings on page 26 of its order regarding spousal maintenance,
yes.
You know, I mean, basically what the court says in this paragraph is, you know, that his husband's expert didn't testify at trial, et cetera. He suddenly said he wanted nothing to do with the four businesses. And then it says, it's the husband's job in seeking spousal maintenance to prove his entitlement. And then it says, husband failed to do so. He failed to provide a budget for himself. He provided no evidence as to his ability to seek employment, income earning potential without the businesses, nor an accurate cash flow depiction, et cetera. So it seemed like the district court said, this was your job and you just didn't give me what I needed.
I think that's absolutely wrong.
Okay.
Because first of all, these were not the findings of the district court.
Well,
I do not believe the district court, I don't know what the district court did. I don't know if he read them. I don't know if he didn't read them. They were adopted verbatim, typos and all. And it's a
We do have case law that says, although we frown on essentially adopting one party or the other's proposed resolution, it's not per se erroneous.
I agree, Your Honor. It is not per se erroneous, but I believe what that case law is saying is we need to hold that judgment and decree to a higher standard. We need to hold that judge to a higher standard. And those findings are not Judge Burns's findings.
Well, let's assume they are.
Okay,
what evidence did he put in? I mean, the district court said the findings say.
Yes, Your Honor, he did put
able to seek gainful employment. He's healthy, able-bodied, strong experience, et cetera.
What's I'm so sorry for interrupting,
That's
Your Honor.
Okay.
He actually did put in evidence, right? We've got the entire record full of what the family did and what the businesses earned, right? And their roles in the business and what they did, et cetera. We've got and that they work for these businesses their entire adult lives. They've never done anything else, really. And, Your Honor, we do have a budget. He testified at trial that his budget was similar, so similar to respondent's budget, that he claimed that as his own. My client did not get cross-examined on trial on that issue. His claim that his budget was like respondent's budget was never contested at trial.
So can we speak to the, thank you, I appreciate that, his income.
Yes, income.
And the, what you are arguing the district court should have decided his income was. What should the district court decided his income was?
Very good question, Your Honor, and I was thinking about that while I was preparing this morning. And I actually think that the court could have decided his income was zero. It honestly could have decided his income was zero.
Did it have to decide it was zero? What are you telling us that we should say the mistake is? What?
Well, I think I actually think they should have decided it was zero. Even if somebody loses their job, even if you want to say he quit his job, right? Somebody who quits their job still is unemployed. I mean, somebody had to quit the job here, and somebody had to be unemployed. We didn't know until trial who in fact was going to get the business, right? So he was unemployed. There's so much case law, in the child support area and similarly situated in spousal maintenance, we always give people time to rehabilitate. That's what temporary spousal maintenance is about. It's about either somebody losing a job, no fault of their own, or being out of the workforce, obviously, to contribute to the family in a different way. But we rarely say, as district court judges, or rarely say as attorneys, you instantly have to figure out your new life. You instantly have to we're not talking about a man that was making $70,000. The judge imputed income to him at $50,000 a month. The only way Mr. McMullen is ever going to make that money again is to start up another business after the two-year non-compete ends. He's a regular guy. This is a blue-collar family that work super-duper hard, don't have college degrees, and created an incredible business and found a niche in this market. I mean, it's an incredible story, and it's got a terribly sad ending. But I do think...
So his job in seeking maintenance, spousal maintenance, did he have to... All right, so the businesses go to wife. He then will not be working for the businesses. You're saying the district court should find zero. Does he have any obligation when a district court says, I'm seeing someone who's healthy, able-bodied, with strong experience? Does he have any obligation to put on evidence saying, I cannot work elsewhere?
Well, I think that the evidence is, give me time to figure out where I can work. And at a minimum, we know he can get a job at Starbucks or Target. And we expect people who come into the child support magistrate system to do that. So certainly Mr. McMullen had the ability to make minimum wage. And I would never argue that he couldn't do that. He's subject to a non-compete. He can't work anywhere in the same area. None of the competitors are going to touch him at all. Like, I'm sure there would be a claim to violating the non-compete if he worked for any competitor in any capacity at all. This man was bound and locked into a low-paying job for 2 years. That's what happens to people when they're subject to non-competes, right? Physicians are subject to non-competes in the Twin Cities, which is amazing. And literally will not be able to get employment until their non-compete runs out unless they go all the way down to Rochester. So this is it's an unusual case. It is an unusual case, and what makes it even more unusual is that the judge adopted verbatim the proposed findings from respondents. So we really don't have any idea what analysis was undertaken and what facts were really considered, because, again, as we all know, when we do proposed findings, we are obviously looking at them at the light most favorable to our clients, right? I mean, I've been doing family law for 30 years, and I've never had proposed findings adopted verbatim after trial. There's nothing not unusual about this case, but I don't understand why there's a sense of punishment for Mr. McMullen because of the position that he was put in when we knew somebody was going to be put in that position. Thank you, Your Honor, and I'll still
have... Thank you for your comments.
Yep, thank you.
And we'll hear now from Respondent Counsel.
Thank you, and good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel, my name is Katie Lammers, and I represent the respondent in this matter, Erica McMullen. I respectfully request that this Court affirm the District Court's decision. Your Honors, plain and simple, this case is about regret. We're here today because the appellant changed course midway through trial, and when all was said and done, he was not happy with the decisions that he made. As this Court knows, unfortunately, that is not a standard of review that we can rely upon. A review of the record and this conversation today will support that it is abundantly clear that the District Court did not abuse its discretion or misapply the law, and the lower court's decision must be affirmed. There's five main issues before the Court today. So we've identified they are all intertwined to a certain extent. The first is that the District Court did not err in determining child support. The second, the District Court did not err in failing to award spousal maintenance to the appellant. Third, the District Court did not err as a matter of law when it subjected appellant to a non-compete without an award of spousal maintenance. Fourth, the District Court did not abuse its discretion by awarding the respondent attorney's fees. And finally, the District Court did not err in adopting respondent's proposed judgment and decree. I know you've reviewed the file, Your Honors, but there are a few additional facts I would like to raise with the Court. The valuation date for the businesses was a contested issue leading up to trial. My client had proposed initially that the Court consider an alternative valuation date of December 31st of 2020. Her expert, Jennifer Loeffler, prepared business valuations with the valuation date of December 31st of 2019 and December 31st of 2020. Judge Burns, the District Court judge.
And which issue is this going to of the five you listed?
Your Honor, this is just some background facts as it relates, I believe, to Mr. McMullen's decision to change his position at trial. When we started trial at the outset, both parties presented evidence based upon the premise that Mr. McMullen would be awarded the businesses. That's why the expert reports were positioned the way that they were. When Mr. McMullen changed position during the trial, a review of the transcript might tell Your Honors that the reason he was doing that was because he thought Judge Burns was taking a look at the 2020 values for the business. But it's abundantly clear from the record that both Judge Burns had issued an order prior to trial that he was using the 2019 values for the value of the businesses, but that the 2020 values may be relevant as it pertains to cash flow. So, Your Honor, I only wanted to draw your attention to that particular issue was because Judge Burns was very clear that he was going to use the 2019 business values, which was what Mr. McMullen had wanted the Court to do.
So, to me, this case seems about they jointly own a business, earn a lot of money, both of them, from it.
Correct.
One of them's going to get it at the end because they can't do it together. Wife said, if husband gets it, I want spousal maintenance. Husband says, presumably, he wants spousal maintenance if she gets it. I presume he made that argument for spousal maintenance to the District Court. The District Court denied it and decides that his income is going to be what he was earning when he was in that business most recently, right? and he can't compete in it. How does that all make sense?
Here's what I think the crux of the issue is, Your Honors. The district court must use the evidence that's presented at court in preparing and making their findings. Ms. McMullen presented, she had experts testify. She put evidence into the record that supported the notion that if she was requesting maintenance, she would want maintenance. When Mr. McMullen changed stream during the trial, there was no request, A, for leave of court to present a budget, to present any type of cash flow scenarios that contemplated Ms. McMullen receiving the businesses. And the district court at trial has to rely upon the evidence that's been presented.
What does that mean, the cash flow analysis? How does that relate to his income? What
sure.
He's saying, I'm not going to have income.
Yes. So there were a lot of questions around that. So first of all, Mr. McMullen at trial didn't testify, impute me at minimum wage, there's nothing else I can do. He talked extensively about his skill set as a salesperson and all of these different things that he had done in his work life. But I think importantly, when I talk about cash flow scenarios, what we do, and this is very, very common, is we take a look at also imputed income from investments that parties receive as part of their settlement. Mr. McMullen, via a stipulated agreement about how to divide the other assets, received over $1 million. And once the business buyout was going to go through, he was going to receive another $1.8 million. So Mr. McMullen did have assets, will have assets, does have assets.
But he needed to put in, I mean, obviously the assets won't be, that's not income. So it's only what they throw off, right?
Correct, Your Honor, yes.
And so whose job was it? Was there evidence about what are you saying? When you're referring to cash flow, I thought you were talking about the businesses. You're talking about cash flow that would come from investments on the assets that he's got?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's very, very clear that a spousal maintenance applicant bears the burden of showing to the district court, I have a need for maintenance, the other side has an ability to pay, and then the court considers all of those factors. And the reality of the situation is if the person requesting maintenance doesn't adequately make that request, they have the burden. And if they don't make that request, the door doesn't open. So here...
So when the district court said in its findings that I read from the paragraph that I was looking at, earlier, the district court said he has sufficient income from the assets awarded herein. I mean, those assets couldn't, like, well, we're talking $2 million. They're not going to throw off $50,000 a month.
They're presumably not going to throw off $50,000 a month. However, the very first stage of the spousal maintenance analysis is need. And Mr. McMullen did not demonstrate need. We don't know as we sit here. We don't know as we sat here at trial. Does he need $5,000 a month? Does he need $10,000 a month? You know, he testified, and the word similar was used with respect to Mr. McMullen's
so
budget.
So what I'm hearing is your strongest argument is he just kind of laid over and didn't do anything to make his case.
I think that's one of the arguments, Your Honor. I think that it's very uncontroverted law that the spousal maintenance requester bears the burden of saying, here, I'm a spousal maintenance candidate. We heard a decent amount about what was going on leading up into trial, and the person who's asking for the maintenance has the burden. And by coming forth and saying, you know, I have a budget that's similar to wife's, well, he didn't say what was similar or what was dissimilar. It's his burden. It's not wife's burden to try to point out what's different in the budget. He didn't even give a full number. At the end of the day, I need $15,000 a month. And so the district court had to do what the district court could do in terms of analysis with respect to what was put into the record. And at the very, very bare minimum, the first step that the district court needs to find is, does this person have a need? And that's not Ms. McMullen's burden to demonstrate. That's Mr. McMullen's burden to demonstrate that he has a need, and he failed to do so. He failed to demonstrate that he was unable to work in any other capacity. I've heard for the first time here today that Mr. McMullen's income should have been imputed at zero. Mr. McMullen never even raised the issue of what his income should be at trial if he wasn't going to be working in the businesses. That's Mr. McMullen's responsibility.
Where are the responsibilities relative to income when we get to child support? And can you speak about that?
Yes.
So that, I think, Your Honor, is a little bit different, and I think the district court treated it a little bit differently.
So they took the available information that was in the record with respect to incomes. At this point, when trial was going on, the parties both were still working in the business. Nobody had been, you know, terminated or that nothing had happened. They both continued to work in the business and receive income accordingly. Because of the challenge presented by Mr. McMullen's decision to change stream in the trial, what the district court did is they said, once that business buyout goes through, and once, you know, we have a different idea of what incomes are going to look like, come back. It's a de novo review. Come back in, and we will take a look at what child support is if and when those circumstances change, which I think, given the information before the court, was a perfectly appropriate way to handle that. Mr. McMullen hasn't filed any motions in the district court to have his child support reviewed or looked at, and given the information before the court at the time and that the parties were both still working, receiving income and distributions from the company at the time of trial, I believe that that was an appropriate way to do it.
What about the amount that was determined? And that's kind of the thrust of appellant's claim, is that the gross monthly income was erroneously calculated. And the argument I heard is that the business had a projection of income over a 20-year span, and the judge in this court did the 5-year average or took a look at, why should the judge not have considered more of the life history of the business?
So when we're looking at child support, and I think this also pertains to maintenance as well, the court is within its discretion to look at what the current incomes are. There was lots of testimony from Jennifer Loeffler about how this business had grown over the years, and so there was some historical analysis of the past cash flow. But when we're looking at child income for child support particularly, we take a look at what the income actually is at the time that the motion or the issue is being considered by the court. So first of all, Mr. McMullen didn't raise at the district court level that, okay, when it looks like for child support here, you know, we really can't be looking at this current income. Judge Burns expressly said that part of the reason he was letting in information on cash flow from the businesses for 2020 was because it is relevant to cash flow. And when I say cash flow, I'm referring to not the cash flow of the business, but the distributions and money that the parties were receiving because it was continuing to trend up.
So I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Was there anticipated income? Was it even in here that at the point of the J&D, between the J&D and then the later buyout, that there would be income that he would be earning? Or would it reduce to zero at that point?
The district court did not make findings around that, Your Honor, because there was no information presented for the district court to do so. So they solved it by that de novo solution. What Mr. McMullen could have, I would say should have done, was filed a motion to preserve retroactivity back to the date of the issuance of the judgment decree. The court made some findings as of April when the judgment decree was issued about Mr. McMullen no longer being involved in the businesses. There was lots of testimony about harassment and concerns about Mr. McMullen's behavior, which is why, you know, we got into that issue of the non-compete. And the child support statute allows for retroactive modification of child support back to the date that a motion is served and filed.
And what's the gap between the J&D and the buyout? Buyout was required by September 22, is that it?
The buyout, Your Honor, still has not occurred. I understand that this is probably outside the scope, but it's been ordered to happen tomorrow. There were a variety of issues that were going up on the district court level in terms of contempt and things of that nature. So the window was supposed to be small. It was supposed to be September. That didn't happen. And I don't want to go too far beyond like what's in the record, but it hasn't happened.
Okay.
But however, Mr. McMullen, I just want to make sure I'm good on time. Okay. Mr. McMullen could have and should have filed that motion, preserved the retroactivity, and then the district court, the second he was no longer employed, could have heard arguments and issued an order, say, commencing April 15th of 2022, this is going to be the new child support obligation. And candidly, Your Honor, Mr. McMullen has not done that, but that was the way that the district court was going to handle that issue, because again, they can only make findings given what they're presented. Mr. McMullen didn't even testify, "I think I can only work at Target or Starbucks." You know, and again, this is the first time we're hearing Mr. McMullen say, "I will have zero income." And that's, it's well established, Your Honors, that anything brought up on the district court, not brought up on the district court level, can't and shouldn't be considered here at the error-correcting court level. I do want to just touch very briefly, about 30 seconds, on the non-compete issue. A review of the record will show that Mr. McMullen did not say, "I will only sign this non-compete if I get spousal maintenance." As a matter of fact, he testified over and over again that he understood that spousal maintenance was a separate issue, and he was not certain that he'd be getting it. The court wasn't certain. Counsel acknowledged it, and he agreed to a non-compete on the record. We defer to agreements and stipulations made by parties, and the non-compete issuance was not error either. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Ms. Remington, you have the last word.
Thank you.
Would you start by following up on the statement that husband had agreed to the non-compete?
Your Honor, he did agree to a non-compete, but he never agreed to waive his right to consideration, right? He did agree to a non-compete, absolutely, positively, right? Consideration for a non-compete would have been additional money. It would have been spousal maintenance. This case is really
about... When did he identify what he thought the consideration was?
He says that I don't remember exactly in the record, Your Honor, but he says that I'm asking for exactly what Ms. McMullen was asking for, meaning he was asking for spousal maintenance. This is what is lacking of just, like, common sense on this case. This case really is about spousal maintenance. This case is not about regret. If it were about regret, he would be coming up with some convoluted argument to ask for the businesses back. That's regret, right? He just is at the Court of Appeals because he did not get a fair shake on the issue of spousal maintenance. You know what? Child support's a throwaway. It's $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went into trial with Ms. McMullen asking for approximately $30,000 a month between spousal maintenance and child support. And the only evidence that she put in the record was the same evidence that I was relying on. She has no more evidence in the record about her inability to work and ask for $30,000. We knew these people could not make $50,000 if they did not work at these businesses. How do you prove a negative? What am I supposed to do? I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me that the tables could be turned so abruptly, and that nothing that applied to Ms. McMullen now applies to Mr. It just makes no sense. Again, Your Honor, because you asked specifically about the five-year average, and the income that was the most current in the record was 2020 and 2021. It wasn't 2019, which is what they relied on. That was an old year. Her expert was the one who even put in the numbers for 2020 and 2021. So, Your Honor, the other thing that I want to be crystal clear about, she keeps harping on the fact that Mr. McMullen did not present evidence. That's just not true. I did a whole bunch of mathematical calculations in my brief, and I got that from the record. I got that from Exhibit 144, which I knew was the most important trial exhibit because it had all the information about the businesses. It had the values, it had cash flow, it had everything in it. And it was respondents' numbers. They couldn't contest it. And now I'm here. It's hard to explain the disbelief where this case has gotten to, because there was evidence. I couldn't have done all the math if there wasn't evidence. I did plenty of math in my brief that the district court judge could have done. Nobody has a responsibility to give district court judges fancy cash flow schedules. I did all that math by myself based on their experts' information that was not contested. Again, and then another piece of evidence, right? Mr. McMullen and Ms. McMullen, this is probably a little outside the record, but it was raised, which is they lived within walking distance of each other. Their houses were the same. Their cars were the same. They had an incredibly similar standard of living. And again, that is what Mr. McMullen said. My budget is like Ms. McMullen's. We live in the same neighborhood. We do the same things. It's about $17,000 a month. That was not contested. That was not contested. So, Your Honors, unless you have questions, I was going to save my 15 seconds for wrapping up.
No, it appears there's no questions.
Okay. So, because of this case and because of the complexity and the dynamic, what are we asking for? I mean, why am I asking for the district court decision to be reversed and remanded? There more likely than not has to be a remand in this type of case. But what I'm looking for is not for this case to be relitigated. The evidence is in the record already. What I'm asking for is for very specific instructions from the Court of Appeals, you know, to find that appellant's income as set forth in his brief is either zero or minimum wage, because that complies with the facts and the law. I'm also asking for directions from this court to say to the trial court, you must find that respondent's income should be calculated as set forth in respondent's brief. I mean, there's a range, so based on the facts and the law, right? Again, the instruction would be, district court, you need to find that appellant's reasonable monthly income is $17,084. He testified that his budget was the same as respondent, and no one contested that. You should instruct the trial court to find that appellant is in need of spousal maintenance because that is according to the law and Melius and our statutes as I see it, and that the whole issue is need and ability to pay, right? Of course he had a need. Of course she had the ability to pay. You need to instruct...
I need to remind you, you're going to have to wrap up.
Okay, need to instruct
the... 2 minutes over your time.
Okay, that spousal maintenance be calculated according to these appropriate findings, right? And then, Your Honor, we ask that the district court award of fees be reversed. And I do thank you for indulging me in extra time on this very complex case.
Thank you. Thank you to both attorneys again for appearing at the Court of Appeals building. We appreciate your arguments that are in support of your briefs, and a decision will be issued in the statutory time frame, which is 90 days. This court will now stand in recess.